My name is Chris, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA, and since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Chris P. and Anita, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Leslie will read the preamble.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leslie. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, and that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. David S. will read the steps.
David, alcoholic.
Hi, David.
The 12 steps. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Sorry. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Shauna T. will read the traditions.
Hi. This one. Hi, I'm Shauna. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Robert M.
Hi, I'm Robert, alcoholic.
Hi, Robert.
It's really a great honor to be able to do service for my home group and to be up here. Thank you, Nye, for asking me, wherever you are. My sobriety day is August 19th, 2010. I have a sponsor, and I'm reworking the steps. I think as long as I can remember, you know, I've constantly, you know, been thinking and thinking and just always trying to figure out what's going on, you know, with myself and the world at a very early age. I was extremely sensitive and painfully aware of my surroundings. And, you know, I could never really be present. You know, I always like to be in the past or the future. I always loved time travel. I always wanted to, have a time machine. I just never wanted to be where I was at that moment. Before I came into the rooms, I would always think back to, you know, when was I, like, happiest? When did things seem like things were all right? And I would always go back to when I was, like, 6 years old, because that's when I like learned how to read, and that's when I started playing baseball, and that kind of those two things like opened up my world. And you know, about 6 years later, you know, those things, the world kind of got a lot smaller, driven by fear, self-driven fear, afraid of you, afraid of everything, and I was afraid of alcohol too. When I was young, I had a neighbor who died of this disease pretty suddenly, and that shocked me. I saw my mom, you know, at an early age get really drunk and messy, and I was like, I'm never doing those things. You know, I just shut down completely at 12. You know, that's the time that when I look back, I'm like, I didn't start drinking then. I went the opposite way. I just shut myself down to everybody and everything. I was like, I'm not doing these things. I'm not going to be open to anybody or anything. And, I'm going to just figure this out all on my own. And I did that for about 6 or 7 years, and then I was in college. People talk about geographics. You know, one thing I did when I was going to college, I used to always go by Bob or Bobby. That was my preferred nickname. And when I went to college, I was like, well, I'm going to go by Rob now, because I wanted to change everything about myself. I hated everything about myself, you know, how I walked, how I talked, how I looked, how I dressed. I just hated myself. And, I felt like when I went to college, everything was going to change. It didn't. I was looking for something greater than myself. I was looking for a solution to my problems. And, my sophomore year, I joined a fraternity, and that's when I started to drink. And, it was fun at first. I had a lot of fun. But I also realized that the only way I could socialize with members of my frat was when I was drinking. I couldn't deal with people. When I was sober, there were people I just could not deal with still. I graduated and I started working, and, things were fine. I was just focused on, working at that point, and that was enough. With things kind of picked up, I moved out to LA. I had a great job opportunity, and I went out there, and, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any family. And I heard of this bar that sounded really interesting. It was a karaoke bar. And I found myself, that was the first place I went to. And I kind of made that my home. This bar in Santa Monica. And I spent, you know, that first year I was out there, I spent a lot of time at that bar. And, I always remember watching Cheers. I always thought it was great to have, like, you know, my favorite seat. You know, I felt like a place where, I belonged. And people knew me, you know, the bartenders, the bouncers, you know, I'd get free drinks. It was great. Those first couple of years where I had a lot of fun. And then things kind of started to slide downwards. You know, career wasn't progressing as I thought, and then I was in this really traumatic relationship that kind of shifted things into another gear, because I just didn't know how to deal with my feelings. It kind of amplified all of my character defects. You know, the lusting, the fear, the anger, the resentment. I just would hold on to things. I just didn't know how to deal with these. And I just would drink more and more. I tried to get them to drink as well. And, yeah, and so, you know, I ended up marrying that person. And that was short-lived. And you know, I split up with her, and I moved out. I was living in West Hollywood now, and I kind of just was falling downwards, downward spiral. It was really quick, and you know, I got an opportunity to actually, I'll go back. So April, I was moving. This is when I moved, April 2010. New neighbor, she actually 12-stepped me. You know, I was talking about drinking. There was this bar right across the street, this Russian bar, and I was just talking about drinking, and she said, all you have to do is have a desire to stop drinking. I mean, that tradition means so much to me, the third tradition, because I thought about it, but I wasn't ready. I kept doing things, got much, much worse and very quickly, and I just felt like I felt hopeless. I felt like a failure. I was 27. I was in much more financial debt than I thought I'd be. My job was not progressing, and it just wasn't good. And I actually was offered to move back to New York for my job. So about that, I'd say that my last day of drinking was August 18th, and drank that whole day, and I came back, and I was trying to sleep that night, and I had like the worst dreams I ever had. And the last one, I just remember, it was just so powerful. I was just in my car, and I was just driving backwards off a cliff, and I just was like falling, and I just remember saying to myself, I'm killing myself. And it, you know, I felt like it was just, I had two paths I could go, and I thought maybe I should go to a meeting, and I did. And I got, you know, I went to a meeting, but I didn't really take in anything. I moved back to New York. I had about 10 days. I was in a bar with an old friend, and I almost picked up. But I had one number in my phone. It was my old neighbor, and I gave her a call, and she kept me from drinking that night. She, you know, probably saved my life, because none of this sunk in at that point. And, you know, I don't think I would have decided to come back. And that's when I realized I need a sponsor, how important sponsorship is. Especially for newcomers, and then start putting my hand out to people, you know, very gradually. It's not easy for me, especially at that point. And I started working the steps, and I kind of was like stuck at step three, and then I lost my job, which was like the best thing that ever happened to me. I actually had to surrender. I was like, well, I guess I have to work this program. I have to really work these steps. And then, I finally did the fourth step, and I wrote it out, and I cleaned house. I went all the way back to, you know, the age of five. I went back as far as I could to just clean everything out, and I kept moving forward. And then, I got to the ninth step. I was able to make amends to my mom. You know, that relationship I had with my ex, you know, I tore my family apart, and I had to heal all those old wounds. And I was actually later on able to make amends to my ex, and, you know, I was able to be a friend to her, you know, when she was going through a tough time. And, you know, I was really grateful to be able to do that. And, you know, I didn't do things perfectly. You know, I started getting things back. You know, I got a job back, and my ego came back. And that's obviously, you know, my ego needs to be deflated. And I went through a rough patch. And then I would say about a year and a half ago, I started coming back to Atlantic Group. You know, I had a new sponsor. I went back to step one. I started working the steps again, and I started to feel that like peace and serenity. And I'm just really grateful for all the people that are in these rooms, the love, the wisdom, how much I just learned just from listening. You know, I don't like being up here too much talking, but you know, it's just, this is a gift. You know, the newcomers just stay. It's not better out there. You know what the results are. Try something different. This has changed my life. You know, before I was hopeless, you know, hopeless mind and body, but now I have hope, and my life has gotten so much better and bigger. I'm able to deal with things that used to baffle me. And it's just gotten better and better. You know, 2.5 years ago, I remember looking up here. I'm like, I'm never going to be up here speaking. That's never going to happen. And, you know, it's nice to be up here and be of service. And I think I'm about done, right? So thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Gina M.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Gina, and I am an alcoholic. Hi. My sobriety date is March 18, 2011. I have a sponsor. The Atlantic Group is my home group, and I've been through the steps 9 through 12, and I want to thank Randy for asking me to speak, and I want to thank the Atlantic Group for being my home group and being my backbone in this whole thing. And I find it quite fascinating that I'm here to carry. It's an honor. I was asked to carry a message to all of you about something that I didn't even believe in when I first got here, and I didn't want to believe in, but I knew that when I came in here, I knew that I hated myself, and I wanted to die, and I was okay with that, but I also knew, I also just wanted, I don't know, by the grace of God, I guess I wanted to explore another way, and, you know, I made peace with hating myself for a very long time. I kind of wrote myself off at a young age. And, you know, when alcohol came into my life, I loved it because it actually, like, put a great dependence on you, on people, because you were my substance for self-esteem. And the way you perceived me and the way, you know, I was perceived by you was my fuel to live by. So alcohol made me less anxious. It made me definitely be able to talk to you and, you know, have relationships with you. And, you know, I started drinking in college. I was a huge party girl. I like to think I was very famous in the nightlife community down in the Lower East Side. And, you know, that was great. But by the end of college, I was covered in bruises. I couldn't hold a job. I had been arrested. I was severely depressed, and while everyone else was going out to find jobs and start careers, I moved back in with my mom in New Jersey. She graciously let me live with her, and we needed to figure out what was going on with me. You know, just night after night of like waking up in places I didn't know where I was with people I didn't know, and my mom got me involved with, or she got me to meet with this doctor, and he was a psychiatrist, and he was the first, he was very well versed in alcoholism. Looking back, he, you know, immediately after sharing my story with him, he was like, I think you're alcoholic. And I was like, there's no way. I'm young, and I don't look like an alcoholic looks. I'm not on the street. I'm not, you know, meanwhile, I'm covered in bruises. I'm not, you know, homeless, and he was like, the only way I can treat you for anything else or help you in any way is if you go to AA. And I was like, no, absolutely not. And, you know, I had a preconceived notion as to what AA was. I thought it was just old, sad men crying into their beer bottles over their lost children. And I don't know. And I didn't even think you stopped drinking. I think you just cried about your drinking. And so he's like, okay, well, the only way I can help you is if you, you know, go through these series of injections and these pills that will curb your desire to drink. And I went with that. And I did that for a few, you know, there were very painful shots that I had to get. And I did that for a few months. And then I, you know, I had no solution. I didn't know. My mind was out of control. My thinking was off the charts. I went insane. And I went to him and said, sorry, this isn't going to work. And I stopped doing that too. And I drank shortly after, and that night that I picked up, I bought a huge bottle of red wine and drank it at my mother's house and went into a blackout. I went for the knives under the cupboard, I went for the pills that the doctor had prescribed me, and I went into my bedroom. And I didn't do anything. But the next day, I was ordered by the police to go to the psych hospital, and that's where I was. And again, they brought up AA, and I was like, yes, because I wanted to get out of the psych hospital. But I didn't go. I just said that I would. And in follow-up visits, I told him that I was going. And I drank, you know, again for 2 more years. And I ended up back in New York, and I was working in a bar, and I would see these girls, these women who were my age in their mid-20s, come in with, like, men on dates. And they would have one glass of champagne. It was a classy bar, okay? And they would have, like, one champagne and leave. And I was like, I want that. I want to drink like that. I want what they have. Thank you. And, you know, right before I got sober, there was this guy that had asked me on a date, and I went into a blackout on the date and said insane things, did insane things, and I don't know why, but he asked me out again. And I remember, and I remember saying to myself, I'm not going to do that this time. I'm going to act like a lady. I really like this guy. And I couldn't go the 10 blocks from work to meet him without going into a bar and having 3 drinks before I met up with him because I was terrified. I didn't know how to do relationships or do anything with another person. So thankfully, I have a friend in this program. His name is Brooke. I'm so grateful to him. He broke his anonymity to me and took me to my first meeting. And I was just so willing to go. I mean, what else were my options? And my first meeting, how lucky am I? It was the Sunday night Atlanta group meeting. And I'm quite certain, I didn't know that it was this then, but I'm quite certain when I walked in the door and walked up those stairs that was my first, like, again, connection with a higher power. Because at the top of the stairs, these women are all sober today. I met Hannah and Nicole D now and Heather M. And they just smiled at me and took my number. And, you know, I went to the watch that night, strangely, I don't know why, but it was very attractive. It was, you know, this is a program based on attraction. So it was very attractive, these beautiful women wanting to get to know me and wanting to help me. And I remember turning to Hannah and saying, I don't have any friends. And she said, I didn't either. Sorry to call you out, Hannah. But, and that was the first time that I identified. And, with another person in years. And I met my sponsor that night, Marla, and we started going through the steps. I called her the next day and she asked me how I was. And I'm like, not great. I'm going to work and they're doing this and this and that. And she said, well, what can you bring to the table? And I remember I stopped dead on the street and I was like, that, it was like hearing a foreign language, like thinking like what I was, I was bemused. I have never heard of such a concept. And, you know, that's been my sobriety, just trying at least and being guided, but with a sponsor, like, what can I bring to the table? And we went through the steps, and I did my third step with her and my fourth step. It was very painful, but the fifth step was so beautiful for me. That's where I truly realized that I'm a sick person and I'm not a bad person. And that's where I started to realize that, you know, upon looking at my defects, that once I learn about this, this is going to be the key to my past being of use. I mean, I tear up every time I read the 9-step promises, you know, no longer do I feel that useful, like, feeling of, like, just having no purpose. I mean, it's so wonderful when a newcomer calls me, when I speak to a newcomer and I can help in any way. Service is a big part of my recovery. I was asked to do service commitments, or I was asked to get service commitments, and I did them. And, you know, I made friends through doing those service commitments, and I felt a part of, and I felt useful. And today, like, it's promised in the book, I have a host of friends. I have a host of fellows. I have a safe place that I can go to. If you're new or, you know, I struggled in sobriety too. It's so simple. Thank you. But just truly just stay. I mean, you get out of that pain that you might temporarily be in. It's going to change. I know that it always changes for me. I want to thank my family for being here tonight, my mother, grandmother, and aunt for being here. And I get to have a relationship with them that's just wild. I got to spend, you know, it's my godmother as well. I got to spend Mother's Day with all three of the wonderful women in my life who have stuck by my side and show up for my family, that have showed up for me. They asked me if there were programs. They got here at 5. They wanted good seats. They love me. It's my turn to love them. I love all of you. Thank you so much for my sobriety.
And our main speaker tonight is Raymond.
That's good. 1, 2. All right. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Raymond. I am really, really excited about being here. I feel so blessed by God. I want to say a couple of things before I get into it. I might get excited up here. I might get overly zealous. I don't know what I'm going to say. I just want to say a couple of things. I didn't come here to tell anyone how you should work your program. I came to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. And I often tell people, eat the chicken and spit out the bones. Okay? If we don't apply, let it fly. All right? I like to talk about myself. And if me talking about me messes you up in some type of way, it's important that you call your sponsor immediately after the meeting. All right? I also want to thank Stephanie. I got dry. I'll make a distinction between dry and between dry and sober. My sponsor made me make that distinction early in my sobriety. I remember I said, listen, I'm sober this amount of months. He stepped to me. He said, listen here, little Mexican. All right? And I'll share about that later, but he says, you're not sober, you're dry. When you're sober, I'll let you know, all right? And that has, some other stuff happened there. I remember once I went to a meeting and this guy said he was recovered, right? And I like the way that sound. First 100 guys in the big book, recovered. Guy from the hood, I want to be recovered too. So I raised my hand in the meeting. I said, check it out. My name is Raymond. And I'm recovered, right? And my sponsor said, let me talk to you. Come here, let me talk to you. He said, check it out, you little Mexican. Don't ever, ever, never say that you're recovered again. You will never be recovered. Other people in AA, yes. You, no, all right? So I have a long love-hate relationship with my sponsor. His name was John Conroy. He passed on. John C. John Conroy, he passed on. One of the first healthy relationship I ever had in my life. And of course, that's largely due to his sobriety, his patience, his tolerance, his love, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and him embracing a guy that was probably unembraceable when he got here. And so I just want to say also, I want to welcome the new guys or those struggling, I didn't get this the first time, this is the first go around. I struggled. I got dry in the Greenpoint group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was mostly white people. I hated white people at the time, So I had a big problem. It was a big dilemma. And I thought that they didn't like me. And I thought if you said hi to someone next to me and didn't acknowledge me, I thought you was a hater. And so I just want to say I came in here struggling with a lot of issues that I had not known. I didn't know I had issues. But I had a lot of issues. I had more stuff than a little bit. And I came in and I struggled. And I couldn't hear a lot of people due to sexuality or due to femininity or due to masculinity or due to a higher power or due to quoting the big book. I had a lot of barrier. I had a lot of stuff that before I could hear the message, I had to break through a lot of barriers. And because I had these barriers, unfortunately, my story is that I drank again. And in drinking again, it was a big part of my story. Because I got beat up pretty bad out there. And while I was drinking, in the midst of getting, you know, actually in the midst of a physical beatdown, in the midst of a couple of guys beating me up on the avenue, everybody looking, I had this thought. I had a moment of clarity. And it's just simple, like, yo, papi, we don't got to be living like this no more. You know, that was it. In the middle of the guy punching me, you know, it was just real simple. Yo, papi, we don't got to be living like this no more. You know, we can go to AA and we could, you know, there's people like you, worse than you. They're doing this thing here. And look at you, you're playing yourself right now. You're getting beat down again, embarrassed again. Your mother's crying again. Your sisters are embarrassed again. The people in the neighborhood, again. You know, I hate the against, you know. I'm very afraid of the yets, but man, how I love the against. And so I came back. And while I was drinking, I come from the street. I'm what I consider a cartoon gangster, all right? I'm 17 years old, but I've been in jail 19 years, you know? I'm one of those guys, you know? My first four-step could have been like a movie, you know? I beat up 16 guys in jail. I beat up the riot squad, and I got 69 felonies. And, you know, me and Nino Brown were cool, and a whole bunch of craziness. And it took a long time before I could get into reality, before the fog can lift. All right, so I came back February 28th, 1991. I was 17 years old. So I know you did a great job, Gina and Robert. Thank you so much. Wonderful. You made it very easy for me to come. I feel comfortable. Thank you so much for your experience and the hope. I thank Stephanie because you never know whenever you're going to make a meeting, and it could be like your normal meeting, like maybe a meeting you don't want to go to, or you might feel like you're obligated to go to a meeting because you have a commitment or something like that. And you never know when you're going to run into somebody or hear something where something will shift for you in the spiritual realm, or that person, like Stephanie did for me, will open doors into your sobriety that you didn't know existed. And so I'm very grateful for people like her. And I'm sure she's not embarrassed. I'm shouting her out. I love her dearly. I didn't know you can have a girlfriend, female, and not go to a hotel. You know, I didn't know that. I didn't know that before I got here. And this is proof that, yeah, I have very strong emotional feelings towards Stephanie. And they're straight up AA. She's my sister in sobriety, and she means a lot to me. And a bunch of other people. So, all right. So that was it. I came to AA. I was twisted. I was tore up. I was messed up. I couldn't drink successfully. I tried every which way possible to drink successfully. I switched up. I moved around, hung out with them. I left no rock unturned. I was thorough in my pursuit to drink successfully. I could not drink successfully. I drank. I turned into a monster. They put the monster in a cage. I come up with a master plan while I'm in the cage, right? I get out the cage. I don't know how much, you know, it differentiates between depending what part of my story I'm in. I drink again, turn into a monster, and they put him in a cage. And so when I got here, I had a lot of, you know, it talks about there are those who might have emotional or mental disorders, grave, I think it says grave. Yeah, that's they're talking about guys like me. So if you hear and you bugging out and you hear voices and you got issues, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, all right? Because now I came in here and I had this voice, man, this voice with me all my life, this voice. I always had these great ideas and they weren't so great when the consequences came, you know? And so I'm very grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to try to settle down and slow up a minute. I came back from my slip, from drinking again, and I was embraced by people in AA. I was a hater, you know. I wish some people would drink again. I didn't like people who believed in God. I didn't like people who quoted the Bible. I hated people from Atlanta Group, from Pacific Group. You know, I was a hater. I was a straight-up hater. And it's important that you hear that, all right? And when I came back, all I got was love. All I got was compassion. People were patient with me. I was belligerent. I was angry. I came to AA with a 9mm. All right, now I'm just, 9mm, a razor in my mouth. I come from that lifestyle. I come from that, and that's what I knew. I thought sponsorship was absurd. I didn't know the word absurd yet. But, you know, all right? But I thought, why would tell somebody your business for free? Just call them and say, yo, papi, I feel like killing my man. And, you know, just, I feel like, You know, just tell somebody where I come from. You don't do that. You never, ever tell nobody what's going on. In this house, everything is wonderful. You see what I'm saying? And so so sponsorship was crazy to me. You want me to ask you to be my sponsor, and you want me to call you and tell you about that? That we don't do that. And on and on and on. So, but I was in enough pain when I came back from my slip. I was in enough pain to do things that I wasn't willing to do the first time I got here. I was racist, right? Straight up racist. But check it out. I'm Puerto Rican. I hated Puerto Ricans too. So it's not like I don't want my white brothers to get it twisted or my black. I hated everybody. When I found out that I hated myself. And when you loathe yourself, I mean profoundly loathe yourself, it's very difficult to like anyone else. And you got to find something, anything, to hate other people or to put them down so that you don't got to connect with. And so that's what I was like for a while. A white guy came into the facility I was in. He had blonde hair and blue eyes, all right? He had motorcycle outfit on, you know, the jeans with the leather chaps, whatever you straps, whatever you call them. You know, and he came into the program I was in, the rehab I was in. I was in adolescent rehab. It was my last shot. And as soon as he walked in, I began to shoot him. Bang, 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 bang. I'm shooting the messenger. Oh, this blonde-headed, blue-eyed devil. You know, I'm shooting the messenger. I'm bugged out. The voice is telling me, don't listen to him. This guy is, And 15, 20 minutes later, without my permission, hope had exploded in my heart. From a messenger that I was most likely not to listen to. And I tried very hard not to listen to. But it was just my day. It was just the day that the God that I didn't believe in blessed me with the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I saw a couple of you guys get this. I heard people's. But after hearing this guy, a thought came into my mind. I said, Raymond, maybe you can get this too. Maybe it's not just them. Maybe you too. And I walk into the meeting. December 25th, Christmas Day, 1990, I came in twisted. I came in Megilla Gorilla, face fighting with everybody. I'm making faces to everyone, making sure I'm trying to intimidate people. Don't hug me. I got my nine. I'm like, what? You know. And so I walk into the Greenpoint group, and this old man, 100 years old man, comes up to me. His name was Ray Keene. He went on to be, I was raised by wolves in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I say. All right, this old man Ray King come. They told me to stay by the microphone, but he comes up to me real. Hi, my name is Ray K. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You want some coffee? So, the coffee, the bathroom. I said, yeah, it's all good. It's all good, my man. And so this other 100-year-old man came up to me, and this guy was dressed like John Travolta, and he said, and check it out. He said, listen here, little Mexican. Right, that's where the whole little Mexican thing started, right? I said, check it out, papi, I'm not Mexican. He said, listen here, little Mexican. All right? He said, when you come into these meetings, you make sure that you leave macho me at the door. Because if you was a true gangster, you'd be in jail or you'd be dead. He said, you make sure also that when I talk to you and I see you, you leave poor me at the door. He says, because you made it to Alcoholics Anonymous, you, Raymond, you have lost the right to feel sorry for yourself. And I didn't know what he said. I didn't understand it. That might sound good to some of y'all. I'm going to just punch this old man in the face. That's what I thought about. That's what I said. This, call me a Mexican? Or, what's wrong with this guy? You trying to play me? That's all I heard. I didn't hear, That's it. So anyway, after a while, he kept stepping to me. He kept saying, and then I said, I would share, C-74, Rikers Island, Adolescents at War. If it ain't rough, it ain't right. I got slogans where I come from. I'd rather be carried by 6 than judged by 12. And, I got slogans, snitches get stitches. And, So he came up to me and says, if you're such a gangster, if you're such a killer, why are you always scared and you in the back? He said, why don't you come sit up front? You're a tough guy. I said, he knew, and he was rough with me. It wasn't like, you want a cup of coffee? He said, it was a different time of sponsorship. He said, listen, if you want to drink, go ahead and do your thing. You want to stay sober? Let's get busy right here. This is the deal here. You want to drink? That's your problem. You want to get sober? That's our problem. And I'm not saying it was all right. I'm just telling you my story. So he was rough, a rough guy. I called him up, you know, it was a big meeting like this. I didn't know how to identify my feelings. So whenever I had feelings, it was like bloop, 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 bloop. I want a drink. I want a drink. And so every day, bloop, 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 bloop. Because you'd be in a meeting, people talking about stuff. Bloop, 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 bloop. I want a drink. So in a meeting like this, a big meeting, he pulled out $20 and he put it on the table in front of everybody. Said, yo, you want a drink, puppy? Go have one for me after the meeting. You want to stay sober? Let's get into the work. And I was like, he embarrassed me in front of everybody. Like, this guy is crazy. I will reach out and touch him in AA, you know? John C. saved my life. I never had a father. I never listened to the police. I never listened to school teachers. I listened to correction officers. John C. saved my life. The story goes on and on and on. I hit many bottoms in AA. I just want to say that because I want to get into the solution now. I hit many bottoms in AA. I went to jail dry. I left an 11-step meeting, a wonderful spiritual speaker from the Atlanta group. You know, I felt like I was floating out the room when I left. I got in my car. This guy cut me off. I'm bashing his windows with the club right after the 11-step meeting. You know, I have issues. Right, I tell you, I had issues I didn't know existed. After being here a while, I found out that the issues I knew about had issues. So my issues got issues, all right? So I was in a shootout with 2.5 years dry, right? Shot this kid. It was ugly. You know, it was not a joke. It was, you know, I was messed up. I came, I put down the alcohol. I thought, because of my story, I drink, turn into a monster, the monster goes to cage. I say, if you eliminate the alcohol, then the monster shouldn't turn into a monster no more. I put down the alcohol, and I still turn into a monster. And I found out I don't got an alcohol problem. I have an alcoholism problem. And if I don't treat this disease according to the way it's prescribed in AA, then I could be dry and crazy and go to jail and kill somebody or maybe, you know, and I went through that stuff. So now, I called my sponsor from jail. I said, I've been to your meetings. I made coffee for y'all people, you know, all this stuff, blah, 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 blah. The newcomer cry. And he says, you've done everything not to drink. You haven't done nothing to be sober. He says, yeah, you've done everything not to drink. And you got exactly that. You got miserable abstinence from alcohol. You want sobriety? You want the promises? You find that in the middle of the ninth step. If you're painstaking. You just want pain. Forget staking. You know? And so he told me, you know what your problem is, Papi? You know, he didn't say, Papi, call me little Mexican. He said, you're a balker. That's your problem. You want to come to AA, you come in here, and you want to help how to help you. You come in with your philosophy and your street theory and your street attitude and your cultural thing and this, that, and the other, and you want to come and you want AA to work for you the way you want, and that's not how it works here. You got to surrender to the program. You got to surrender to the process. You can't do things your way. And so I'm in jail. I'm looking at football numbers this time. I'm 2.5 years dry, and I said, I feel like killing myself. Check out what he says. Good sponsorship. He says, before you kill yourself, let me know ahead of time so I can sell tickets. At least AA can make a profit out of it. That's why he told me. It was rough. I was rough sponsorship. He said, if you kill yourself before working the AA program, you're killing the wrong person. You're not committing suicide. You're committing homicide. I was like, wow, that's deep. I don't know what it means. All right? So a miracle happened, and check it out. In jail again, 2.5 years dry, with my own philosophy, my theory, my own things. I want to rip certain parts. I want to work not Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to work Raymond Anonymous. I don't want to do a third step. I don't want to do 11 step. I got issues with God. I come from profound spiritual abuse. When people say God is good, I feel like slapping them when I was in the meetings. I got evidence. I got facts. I got things that happened to me that where God is not good, God cannot be trusted. And, you know, I had to do step work. I've been dry. I was dry for about 4 years, 4.5 years before I started my sobriety journey. And for some people, they need to be dry for a while, whatever your process is. But I didn't come here to be miserable. I came here because I was miserable. And I needed to experience sobriety. The solution's in the steps. The solution's in the big book. And I didn't like that. I didn't come here to do homework with somebody. I never did homework in my life. You know what I'm saying? So I embarked on a journey to the steps. I got a couple of minutes left, and let me tell you what happened. I found out that I had a broken heart. And my heart was full of lacerations and scars, and people had stabbed me in my heart. My father, my mother, my first girlfriend, went my best friend. All this normal stuff that happens to everybody, but I didn't know it happened to everybody, because where I come from, we don't talk about it. And so I got this stuff, and I feel, and like, Rob, I hated myself. They used to call me Little Raymond when I was a kid, and I stabbed my sister, and I told her, don't ever call me Little Raymond again. Because Little Raymond represented, it was a big Raymond, and I hated that guy. And if I could stab him, I would have stabbed him too. But he wasn't around to stab. And so I come from, so I hated Little Raymond. I hated being, and one of the four steps I did, there was a question that said, were you named after someone and what were they like? I was named after my father. I didn't like him. I wanted to cut, you know, a lot of drama there. But doing the steps, I began to realize that I got some stuff that fueled my crazy behavior. And that if I was to do the step work and allow God into my life, that God can heal my heart, that God can heal my wounds. And listen, the stuff I'm saying to you, it used to make me cringe. My head would stand. I used to walk out the meeting when they used to do the promises. Like, I come from not wanting AA, not wanting to work a program, not wanting God. But the pain of being dry kind of forced me to surrender to the AA process. And I did. And I did step work. I talked about stuff that I never would talk about. No, I talked about stuff that I said I would take to the grave. Sexual stuff. My father broke my heart. I was embarrassed of my mother. Sexual thoughts with family. And all types of things that, you know, I found out once I started talking to some men about it and saying that I wasn't the only one. But while I kept it in, while I didn't tell nobody about it, I was alienated. By telling other people about my struggles, my issues, what had happened, stuff. Two words, me too, very liberating, very empowering. When I told the man, listen, I was molested, and you know where I come from, we don't talk about that. And then he said, Poppy, me too. I was like, you too? And it was very freeing. I'm not the only, all right. So I did step work, and I went through the steps the way it's suggested in the big book, which I hated that phrase. Now I love that phrase, right? The thing set me free. I thought I was one of those guys that wasn't going to make it. I thought I was bound to drink again. And a lot of people in AA told me, you're going to drink again. Like my sponsor said, yo, Ray, that's not what he said, but stop the little Mexican thing, right? He said, check it out. If you keep walking around like you in jail, you're going back to jail. And that helped me pick up your pants, take out the gold fronts, stop using profanity. Everybody's not disrespecting you. Everybody's not trying to hate you. You know, everything is not disrespect. Everything is not, nobody's trying to punk you out. This is just relax. Easy does it. Sit with your feelings. It's going to pass. A strong man can sit with his feelings and not be able, you know, a strong man, he don't allow his feelings to dictate his actions, right? You got to sit with your feelings. A lot of spiritual principles and all this stuff. And so I want to share the last couple of minutes, right? I've been sober for 22 years and some months now, right? Stephanie got me in trouble. She got me to, these people came to hear me speak one day. They got me a big book, big dinner, Bill W. meeting. I spoke there. I've been all over. I was a guy that went from the corner to jail, corner to jail, corner to jail. I've been Hawaii, Spain, Africa, London. You know, I've been all over the place, right? Just telling my story. The AA works. It changed me. The thing that I didn't want to work, the thing that I didn't want to do, God was the last card in the deck, and it's the first thing that worked. You know, and when I finally got with God and I finally got with a sponsor and did the work, because I had a good sponsor, but he wasn't good because I wasn't using him. He can't force this thing upon me. I had to want it. And you know, my whole life, one of the greatest things I got. So now let me tell you a couple of things that I got. I've been married 15 years, right? Married 15 years. I never thought I was made for marriage. I needed to be single. I want to mingle. All that wonderful things, right? I'm not about commitment. Let me tell you the truth. Let's just hang out. It's all good in the hood. You know. All right. So I never thought I thought people get married. It's ridiculous. She's going to take 50%. All right. I told my sponsor, I can't believe you guys are doing it. I'm going to get married to her. I'm making a commitment to this girl. She's going to take half my stuff. He said, you bleepity bleep bleep. You little Mexican. Half of what? You know, I didn't have nothing. So I got married, 15 years married. I got kids that I raised in AA. I raised them in AA. They're three AA babies. I take my daughter on dates. Me and my daughter just hung out just yesterday, I think it was. She's the one that she picked out a tie for me and a shirt, but it didn't fit me. So they didn't have my size. Yeah, I came in here, long hair. I had a six pack. I was 17. I was pretty. Forget handsome, forget cute. I was pretty, right? If I could sing, I would have been with Menudo. All right? All right? I was pretty. I got still sober, go for fellowship, hang out, diner. Now I got a 2-liter, and now I'm bald. All right? So this program has transformed my life. I can't believe that this is the guy, that this guy, she said, you know, there's no cursing. I don't curse. I don't use, my sponsor made me substitute. I don't curse. I want to act like I'm sober. I want to talk like I'm sober. I just don't want to be dry. So, all right, great. I got my daughter. We go on dates. I told my daughter, listen, baby, I love you. I named her Precious. Her middle name is Precious. I said, you know why your name is Precious? She goes, yeah, Dad, you told me that a million times. Why is your name Precious? Because I'm very valuable to you. Yes, absolutely. You're very valuable to me. And so I take her out on dates. I want to fill her love tank. I've done a lot of fifth steps, a lot of people. I understand broken hearts, not feeling loved. We act out. We do crazy things to be loved and accepted. I want my daughter to feel love so she don't accept no fake love from a bambalang out there, you know. And so a bambalang is like a doofy moron guy. All right. So I got a 19-year-old and I got a 16-year-old. They, you know, they're boys. They, you know. They know my story. They know I've been in jail. They know I live in the same neighborhood. They know the stories. The neighborhoods, oh, your father this, shot people, did this, did that. I told them I wasn't tough. I was scared. I was a puppet on a string for this disease. It wasn't about being a gangster, reputation. I was a puppet on a string. I did things I didn't want to do, Raymond. And so I try to tell them, you know, they sexual inadequacies. I found out about condoms when I got a girl pregnant at 15. So I didn't want that to happen to my kids. I sat down and said, let me tell you about this thing right here. This is how it works, blah, blah, blah. People call it the birds and the bees. I tell, you know, we say getting it in. So, you know, it's just cultural. That's all it is. It's cultural. And so I talked to my kids about sex. I told them, you know, I talked to my boys about penis size, right? Right? Just because, you know, two boys. I said, listen, Bobby, when it's erect, most guys don't worry about it. All this. Nobody told me this stuff. When I was ravaged, I wouldn't go to the YMCA. I wouldn't use a urinal next to somebody because of, you know, sexual inadequacies. I didn't want my kids to be ravaged by this disease, lying to them. So I'm able to be a father that I never had. My wife, you know, we love the girl. I love her. When she's unlovable, I love her. AA allowed me to. There's a lot of beautiful women here. Right? Like, that's, you know, that's, wherever I go to London, you know, there's beautiful women all over AA. You guys get sober and you're beautiful, right? But check it out. Because of sponsor, because of the steps, whenever I'm in London, whenever I'm in Hawaii, whenever I travel, I act today here. You guys, I act like Valerie's right here next to me. I act like my wife is right here. Now. I want to honor her when she's not looking. I want to love her when she don't know I'm loving her. I want to do things that, because of AA, I sound like this cornball that I'm talking to you about. You know what I mean? And so, before my time is up, Stephanie said this a long time ago, and it meant a lot to me. God is not mad at you. I don't know if you heard it said before. I thought, I was 9 years old, and I knew I was going to hell. Everybody told me, Raymond, I had stabbed my sister, I had stabbed this kid. I was doing terrible things at a very young age. Sex since 7 years old, all types of things have happened. And I knew by the age of 9 I was going to hell, and God was not pleased with me. So therefore, I was mad at God, and I wasn't pleased with him. Some stuff happened in a church basement with a clergy member that broke my spirit. Half of me left the basement. Half of me stood in the basement. And it wasn't until I got to AA that I was able to reconcile my trauma, my sexual abuse. I hated religion. I hated God. And I hated homosexuals since I was 9 years old. And I lived that out. I was walking around with a 9-year-old belief system, living it out in jail and living it out on the streets. I came to AA. I was able to, you know, experience spiritual sobriety. I was able to connect with a higher power. I never believed possible. I can't believe today I'm engaged in a sacred romance. That I love God, that I got a problem. I used to think talking about God was like for, I don't want to curse, suckers. I don't know if that's a curse, but for, you know, for herbs. You know what I mean? Today I'm one of those squares. I learned in AA that if you're a square today, you'll be around tomorrow. See what I'm saying? And so, yeah. So I hope that the new guys, I came in here not believing in this. This was cultish. This was crazy. I came in here not liking it. It changed my life. One of the most precious gifts I got. I got 1 minute. One of the most precious gifts I got in AA. Family, friends. This guy gave me a $3,000 suit in AA. My first suit was, his name was John. I forgot. John, he passed on too. He gave me a $3,000 suit. He was taller than me. We had it changed up so it could fit me. All that good stuff. I got a lot of wonderful things in AA. Family, my whole family believes in God because I experienced an awakening of the spirit. One of the precious gifts I got in AA. I gave my mother 16 years of peace before she died. AA gave my mother 16 years of peace, 16 years of the phone ringing and her heart not stopping, 16 years of the police sirens going off and her not grabbing, you know, her grabbing her chest. AA changed my life. I was a stupid little punk kid when I got here hating everybody. Today, I'm crazy in love with people. I want to encourage people. I think Robert did a great job. Gina did a great job. I think Sam, whoever Sam is, I think you don't know. You're a gangster for having whatever days you got sober. I think that if you're counting days, you're a gangster in my book. And I just said goodbye. Thanks for letting me share.